Chapter 15. 5 July 1935. Joey felt fed up. He'd been office boy at Evans's for a year and was sick of spending every day trying hard to lift some cash and finding he was only able to get his hands on small amounts. Petty pilfering was possible, but he had no use for the stamps he handled, and Lizzie had turned strangely scrupulous and would no longer use the tea and sugar he took home. "Remember how Mr. Bender used to wallop me?" she'd flared at him angrily the last time he'd taken it. "He never did anything worse than wallop. However many times you helped yourself, he let you carry on." "We were children. We knew he wouldn't. Mrs. Bender would never have let him hand us over to the police. They accepted we had to eat, Joey. It's different here." He knew she was terrified he'd be caught, but he'd learned a thing or two in his time. He was very careful. He was saving money, but the amount was growing far too slowly. He knew the only answer was to find an accomplice who handled money. Joey would have much preferred to work on his own, but as he had to have a partner, he knew he couldn't do much better than Bill Purley. He felt he could trust him, though of course he didn't intend to tell him more than he needed to know. The trouble was, Bill didn't take him seriously enough. "You're too young," he said. "Little more than a kid. Hardly out at nappies. You want to run before you can walk." Joey felt more experienced than Bill. He and Lizzie were already living on their own wits and surviving, while Bill still lived at home, protected and nurtured by his parents. Joey felt he'd served a long apprenticeship, too. He thought his schemes through before doing anything and made sure everything he did fitted into his general plan. He looked across at Bill now as he concentrated on driving Evans's van along the Newchester Road on his way to work. "Smashing new van," Bill seemed to sense his gaze. "The very latest Ford T handles like a dream." "What happens to the old ones?" "They get sold off. Bargain prices if you want a van." "Could they still do the job?" "Sure. Evans's sell them as soon as they get a bit shabby." "They go cheap because they need a respray to get rid of the toffee adverts. Thinking of buying one?" "Not yet, but I might. You go round all the sweet shops. You sell this stuff to the shopkeepers." "That's right. Newsagents mostly. Corner shops." "You give them a bill straight away. Do they pay you on the spot?" "Yes." Bill shot him a sly glance. "Cash?" "Usually. They have the takings in the till. Saves them banking it and then paying for the check." "Then you're well pleased to make a little on the side," Joey dared. "I wouldn't do such a thing." Bill's face broke into a sly grin of indignation. "Of course not," Joey agreed. "But if you wanted to, it would be easy. All this stuff loaded in the van, who's to know what happens to it all?" "It's all sealed in them boxes and jars," Bill said, jabbing a finger towards the rear. "Can't open them without it being obvious. Then the shopkeepers refuse them, thinking they're getting short weight." "You need to deal in whole boxes. Only way to make anything worthwhile anyway." "Well, maybe I do once in a while," Bill said confidentially, "but there's a limit to what I can get hold of." "Depends who loads the van," Joey guessed. Hadn't he seen it for himself? He'd also heard rumours that for a backhander one of the stockmen would oblige. "All down to paperwork in the end," Bill lamented. "They've got it all tied up tight. I have to account for what's put on the van." "Only right and proper," Joey said, sniffing appreciatively at the scents permeating through from the back. A real potpourri of vanilla, almonds, caramel, butterscotch and fudge. Although he didn't like the stronger factory smells, he found the finished products more attractive than ever. Bill had helped him sample most of them. He'd been trying to screw himself up to ask since he'd got into the van. He knew he would lose the chance if he didn't do it soon. "I could help you with the paperwork," Joey offered. It was a relief to get it said openly. Bill laughed. It grated on his nerves. "I can make it so they'll never know." "No, no, it can't be done." "It can. Listen." After several minutes during which Joey outlined his plan, Bill was eyeing him differently. "Would it really work?" Joey didn't answer. Bill had to want to do it, really want to. They were waiting at the traffic lights at the bottom of Bedford Road when Bill added, "Might be worth thinking about." "I've already thought about it," Joey said. "The deal's 50-50. Bill's indignation boiled over. "It'll mean extra work for me. Think of all the extra selling, and I'll still have to do a day's work for Evans's. Make them suspicious if I don't. And I've been working out how to do it for weeks, even thinking of it in bed," Joey snapped back. "I'll be keeping their books straight so they won't find out." "I'll be taking all the risks." "We'll both be taking risks. Come off it, Bill. We could be onto a good thing." They covered the last half mile in silence. Then Bill said, "Okay, let's give it a go. See how we get on." Lizzie wedged a square of folded newspaper under the table leg to stop it wobbling, then set out the cracked dishes ready for their evening meal. She'd bought bloaters in the market and a crusty loaf. The yellow flames roared in the grate, and the room was full of cheerful, flickering light. Everything was ready for when Joey got home. Although it was summer, it had been a dull, overcast day, and the evening was chilly. As she sat down to wait, Lizzie sighed with satisfaction. On the whole, she'd enjoyed her first year in Birkenhead. If this was being grown up and independent, it beat being in the care of Seamus and Maisie. She didn't mind that the lino was worn, and that all their cooking had to be done on the open fire. They'd done much of it this way at the gatehouse. She was used to it. She and Joey could do exactly what they wanted, and didn't have to think of anyone but themselves. Being on their own had made them grow up fast. The last vestiges of childhood had dropped away during this year. She heard something heavy being dragged across the ceiling. They could do with fewer people living in the house. Quarrels broke out quite often, in the kitchen or on the stairs. If Joey was out, she would stay here quietly until the shouting died down. She didn't like that part. She was lucky in her job, though. She quite enjoyed cleaning the cinema with either Irene or Mrs. Pole. During the mornings, there were only the two of them in the empty, echoing place. They shouted across to each other as they worked. Mrs. Pole suited her name, being tall and gaunt. She wore crossover pinafores, tied her hair up in a bandana to work, and recounted an endless saga of her husband's failings. When Irene was on, Lizzie shared the thrills and delights her string of boyfriends gave her. None seemed to mean as much to Irene as Joey did to her, but she couldn't talk about that. Irene was a few years older, but didn't seem so. They always started the morning's work on the balcony, one at each end of the back row. They pushed the litter forward under the seats, prodding with brooms in the confined space, wiping out ashtrays and tossing the rubbish into huge containers. Then they hovered down the aisles and went down to the auditorium. Lizzie even liked the scent of the heavy disinfectant they used. The first whiff of it transported her to a fantasy world. They lingered over floor mopping in the foyer, discussed the stills of the Hollywood greats that decorated the walls, and marvelled at the glamorous lives they must lead. The programme of forthcoming attractions was of prime interest. The cashier would allow them in free, except when they had a full house and a queue waiting outside. It was a much-appreciated perk that went with the job. Lizzie took Joey to see every film. The programme changed twice weekly. Lizzie jumped up when she heard the front door slam and Joey's step in the hall. Joey was broadening out, looking more of a man. The girls at the cinema said his lopsided gaze was attractive. She certainly found him so. Everything had changed between her and Joey this year. His face was cold against her own as he nuzzled her, kicking the door closed behind him. When he took off his coat, Lizzie went to balance the frying pan on the trivet and swing it into the flames. "Happy, Lizzie? No regrets about coming?" She shook her head. "We're doing well now, just as I said we would." She turned from the fire, her cheeks scarlet from the blaze. "You did say that one day you'd help me find my mother. We aren't doing much about that." She hankered to know more. It seemed she was letting the chance to do so slip through her fingers. It wouldn't be hard to get in touch with Hannah Mortimer, except that she'd promised not to. Poor Joey was terrified she'd be lured away from him, and she couldn't convince him otherwise. "We will, all in good time. Be patient for a bit longer, Lizzie, please." He threw himself down on the shabby horsehair couch. "I think about you all day, and how nice it is to come home to you like this." His manner was taut. She could feel his excitement simmering beneath the surface. She found his gaze could make her breathe more quickly. "I can't take my eyes off you, Lizzie. You're beautiful." She found him reaching out to her more often. "I just want to touch you. Tell myself you're real." His finger moving up her arm made her shiver with anticipation. He pulled her down beside him on the couch and kissed her. He touched her breast. It made her cling to him. It was so easy to be carried away with love, but the room was filling with the scent of fish. "Come on," she said, breaking free from his arms. "We must eat first." She hooked the bloaters out onto the plates and set them on the table. They always ate first. Usually they were too hungry to think of anything but food, but then later the evening was their own. Joey made up the fire with the flotsam she'd picked up on the beach during the afternoon. It didn't matter that the room filled with the scent of burning tar, or worse, burning rubber. The warmth spread to the furthest corner where they had the bed. As soon as she put her teacup down, he was leading her over to it, as he did every evening, unless they were going out. It was the time of day she loved best, lying in the firelight with Joey holding her close. Over the months they had been here, Lizzie had found Joey looking at her when she dressed or undressed in a way he never had before. At the gatehouse, they'd all walked about half-dressed or undressed, looking for clothes to put on. Although there had been curtains to divide the boys' side of the bedroom from the girls', none of them had taken much notice or felt the need for privacy. But now Joey would stop what he was doing to watch her. They'd spent weeks petting heavily, kissing, cuddling, and curling up to sleep like young puppies. The first time he'd made love to her, it had seemed an easy and natural progression, all part of growing up. Seamus had made no secret of what he'd wanted of Maisie. It seemed a very normal part of life. The outcome seemed a normal progression, too. It was always happening to Maisie. There'd been animals all around them on the farm. At first she'd been frightened. "What if we have—" "Won't happen," Joey said confidently. "I know what to do. I've heard men in the office talking about it. You can get these things in the chemist's."
"I've never heard," she worried.
"Trust me," Joey said. "I'm head over heels in love with you, Lizzie." She knew she loved him too. Otherwise Joey's fingers, trembling as he undressed her, wouldn't bring such delight.
"Aren't we supposed to wait till we're married?"
Joey had grinned in his lopsided fashion. "The girls in the office think it's very naughty not to. But, Lizzie, we'd have to wait years and years."
"It's nice."
She snuggled closer. "When we're old enough, we'll get married," he said contentedly. "Of course we will. But being married won't make that much difference to us. We've always been together, always will be." It seemed to Lizzie that no girl could be loved more than she was. Another year went by, and Joey was beginning to feel better about everything. His savings were growing faster now he had the little enterprise started with Bill. Last night he'd told Lizzie they could afford to rent a house all for themselves. Her face had lit up with smiles.
"It would be wonderful not to have to face Mr. Redway at every turn. He's always in the lavatory when I go."
"An unfurnished house," Joey said. "We'll go out and buy our own furniture. That way we'll get everything smart, just as we want it." Lizzie was over the moon.
"You're doing that well."
"I've been saving up. It's the only way for us." He'd brought a newspaper home, and now they went down the columns of houses to rent, picking out one or two. You look at them tomorrow afternoon, Lizzie. See if there is one you like. It made him feel good to think he was providing more comfort for her. She'd been wonderful. She deserved the best. He was getting bored with his duties as office boy, one of which was pushing round a trolley with the tea urn at mid-morning. Accompanied by one of the kitchen staff, they filled cups and saucers and placed one on the end of each desk in the main office hall. Greg Mortimer liked coffee in the mornings and liked it in a pot so he could pour it himself. Joey set a tray for him and laid out four biscuits on a plate. If any remained when he collected the tray later, he slipped them in his pocket. It had made him boil with frustration, the monotony, the time he had to spend at work, and that so far he'd been able to do so little to hurt Greg. But now, at long last, he was taking Mortimer money, and it was whetting his appetite for more. Like all his other employees, Joey addressed Greg respectfully as Mr. Mortimer. Behind his back he was referred to as the Golden Boy, or Tutankhamun II, said to have been born not with a silver spoon in his mouth, but a gold one. Arriving at his office door one morning, Joey knocked and released the catch, opening it a fraction before turning back to the trolley to pick up his coffee tray. He heard Greg's voice say, "I'm tired of hearing about Bill Purley. He's always up to something he shouldn't be. Sack him. He's been warned before." Joey stopped dead in his tracks. He felt winded, as though he'd been kicked in the stomach. He thought he heard the word police, and his mind fluttered with panic. He felt paralyzed with terror, quite unable to show himself in that room, afraid he'd hear them say, "Sack Joey O'Malley, too. He's in it up to his neck." "What's the matter with you?" The woman from the kitchen who helped him was staring at him. Joey took a long, shuddering breath and made himself push the door wider. The china rattled as he set the tray down on the desk. He could see Mr. Gleason glowering at him. He'd almost returned to the safety of the corridor when Greg barked, "Boy, bring another cup." Joey turned. He knew he was staring as though he hadn't understood a word. "No, I'll have tea, please," Mr. Gleason said, and when Joey still didn't move, added, "Bring my tea here." He got back to the trolley, but was straining to hear what they were saying now. He thought he heard his own name. His hands shook so much he half-filled the saucer as well as the cup. He was stiff with tension. He had to keep a grip on himself, even though it looked as though his newfound prosperity had been blown sky-high. He tried to look at the names on the file folders in front of Mr. Gleason when he took his tea in. He was no longer capable of seeing anything. He felt a nervous wreck. He'd been so sure he'd covered his tracks. He couldn't see how they could possibly have found out. He went back to the mail room, his private bolt hole. He closed the door, though it made it airless and dark, because the only window opened into the hall instead of outside. He knew his panic must show on his face. There was an internal phone on the wall, so that he might be summoned to do tasks elsewhere. He expected every minute to be summoned back to Mr. Gleason and be told he had the sack too. He drank his own tea and tried to pull himself together. He had to take the mail round the factory. He felt better walking about and doing familiar tasks. He helped himself to butterscotch praline. It was his favourite, but for once it didn't please him. Returning to the mailroom, he could hear his intercom buzzing before he opened the door. When he heard the secretary's voice say, "Mr. Gleason would like to see you in his office," the blood was pounding instantly in his head again. He asked, "No?" "Yes, right away." His feet felt like lead. He'd written off his job, written off the chance of getting his own back on Greg Mortimer. Malice and hatred were bubbling through him. He tapped softly and died a thousand deaths as he waited. In the end, he had to knock harder to be heard.
"Come in."
Joey opened the door 6 inches and slid inside. Mr. Gleason looked at him over his glasses and put his pen down.
"O'Malley, yes."
Joey held his breath. It took him a few moments to get the gist of what was being said to him.
"Coped well with the mail and being general office boy for over 2 years. Made a success of it. offer you the job of junior clerk here in the personnel department."
Relief was ringing through him. It was not at all what he'd expected. Another instant and shock bells were ringing again in his head. Not the personnel department. He had to go where the money was.
"Well, what do you say?"
"Thank you, sir. It's very kind. I'm quite overcome."
"Well, then?"
"I'm grateful, really. It's not that. But to be honest, I was hoping for the accounts department."
The words were coming out now in a rush. "I was good at sums at school, and it's always been my ambition to be an accounts clerk." Was he laying it on too thick?
"There's no vacancy in accounts for you at the moment."
Joey gulped.
"I don't mind waiting, sir."
"You're turning down an increase in pay."
Gleason's eyes twinkled behind the spectacles, as though that would tempt him.
"You'd get 5 shillings more."
"I'd still prefer to wait, sir. Accounting is what I really want."
Gleason smiled.
"I like to see a boy who's keen. Much better than drifting in this life. To know what you do want. I'll put you down for the next vacancy in accounts."
Joey found himself out in the corridor again, his head in a whirl. He'd not only survived, but ensured that when he moved it would be of advantage to him. He couldn't believe it. He was in a lather of sweat, and quite incapable of doing anything else for the rest of the afternoon.
"I've lost my job,"
Bill railed that evening when Joey called at his house.
"It's all right for you. They haven't even noticed you're up to no good."
"I take good care they don't. Taking the van home at night. Honestly, Bill, you should have told me you'd had 3 warnings. And fiddling the mileage. I had to do extra miles to sell the stuff you got for me."
"You must have known there was a limit to what you could get away with. You should have taken more care. They could have looked no further into what you were doing, and then you'd be far worse off. You got their backs up."
"Do you know what got their backs up, Joey?
Greg Mortimer saw us at 7 o'clock last night in Hamilton Square. And what was I doing there? Giving you a driving lesson, that's what."
Joey was horrified.
"You didn't tell them?"
"Course I didn't, but it's no good you going on at me. It's not all my fault."
He could feel his heart hammering away again.
"He didn't recognize me."
He wanted to kick himself. He'd jeopardized everything to save a pound or two on lessons. He thought in a big town like Birkenhead, nobody would know him. Of course, the toffee adverts made the van stick out like a sore thumb.
"No, you've got the look of the devil."
"He always calls me boy, anyway. Perhaps it's just as well."
Relief was trickling through him. He thought all was lost this afternoon.
"Sorry, Bill."
"He said I was treating a company vehicle as though it was my private property. He took the number. That's how he knew it was me. I told him I was working late, but I'd already handed in my sheets for the day, all made up, so he didn't believe that."
"Calm down, Bill. You've got your cards, and that's that. Just be thankful they won't be taking it any further. It could have been a whole lot worse.
It's the end of our little earner, too, just when I'm going to need the money."
"Not necessarily,"
Joey said slowly. "I've been turning it over in my mind for a long time. We were working hard for that money. Much too hard. You were spending too much time doing Evans's work."
"Well, I had to, I told you. Anyway, it was good money."
Bill was looking at him warily.
"I think I know a better way."
"Well, I'm open to suggestions, aren't I? I've got no job now."
"It's come at quite a good time. Evans's have 2 old vans for sale. We've got enough money now to buy one."
"I haven't. Good God, we haven't made that much."
"What have you spent your share on?"
"Nothing.
Come off it."
"Once in a while I've gone out and had a good time. A few beers and that. Nothing else."
"I've saved mine, and I have enough," Joey said.
He was careful to keep the contempt he felt from his face.
"You can work for me if it's a job you want."
"You're just a kid. You're talking through your hat."
"I'm not. I mean it. I'll pay you what Evans did, and all your running costs. You can do as much mileage as you want. Think of it, Bill. You'll be on Easy Street. You'll spend all day working for me. I might even give you a bonus if we do all right. After all, I'm not going to have the same overheads as Evans is, am I?"
"You won't be able to keep the van stocked."
Bill was looking at him pityingly. "I won't be able to drive in and fetch the stuff any more."
"I know that," Joey said. "It's been a stumbling block for a long time. I finally thought of a way. I'm going to have to learn to drive, though."
"You can already?" Joey sniffed as he considered. "I've got to have a license."
"Unlucky for you, they brought the test in," Bill sniggered.
"Am I good enough to pass?"
"You seem all right to me."
"Then I'll apply for a test."
"You aren't 17 yet."
"I need to drive now. I'll say I'm a year older. Lots of people did that to join up in the war."
"Joey, you've got to buy the van yet, and they sell by tender, so there'll be no guarantee you'll get it."
Joey smiled. He knew exactly how he'd fix that.
"I'm still the office boy, remember? I steam the envelopes open as they come in and fix my tender just a bit higher. Don't want to pay too much, do I?"
"Aren't you the clever one? But it's going to look a bit suspicious, isn't it? You wanting a van? They know you're only 16.
It'll have to be a false name and address. Do you know anyone who'll go in and pick it up?"
"I suppose I could ask my dad."
"Good. Will you?"
"If you manage to get it. There's the bigger problem of how you'll keep it stocked. You can't just drive in and ask the stockman to load it up either. It's all pie in the sky, Joey, and you know it."
"You leave that in to me," he retorted. "It'll all be up and working in a couple of weeks. Wait and see."
Lizzie turned eagerly into Onslow Road with her friend Irene. It was further to walk home from the Lyceum in the centre of New Ferry, but closer to the river. Once it had been possible to catch the ferry over to Liverpool from here, but a steamer had run into the end of the pier years ago, demolishing part of it, and the service had been stopped. Now only the boarded-up ticket office remained, growing shabbier year by year. The once-smart New Ferry Hotel now relied on local custom in the bar. Many of the shops in the parade were boarded up, too, because trade had gone. The district had become a quiet and shabby backwater. Now that they could afford to rent a whole unfurnished house, she felt they were doing very well. Joey had let her choose this respectable Edwardian terraced house of shiny red brick. It was bigger than the gatehouse, but not over large. Lizzie felt a surge of pride as she put the key in the lock. "This is our house."
"You are lucky," Irene breathed. She was a skinny girl with protuberant brown eyes and frizzy hair. "You've got it lovely."
Lizzie had polished the brasswork on the door until it shone. She'd chosen the new fawn lino that spread up the hall and looked very smart.
"Come in."
She took Irene into the parlour first to admire the new three-piece suite in green velvet.
"We've only just finished doing this room. Only had the suite for a week."
Lizzie looked round with satisfaction.
It looked settled and fashionable, with the new mirror over the mantelpiece and the aspidistra on the window-sill. She'd been dying to show it off.
"Oh, Lizzie, I love your curtains. It's all so lovely."
"It's been hard work," she laughed excitedly.
"It hasn't taken you long."
"We've been at it every weekend for ages, papering and painting and getting everything together."
"Not on hire purchase."
Irene's face screwed up with horror.
"You didn't dare."
"No, it's all paid for. Joey doesn't hold with HP.
"You're lucky having a husband with such a good job."
"Yes," Lizzie agreed warily.
She'd had to tell a few fibs at work to explain things. She told Irene she was 18 and Joey 20, and that they'd been married a year. She'd bought herself a wedding ring in Woolworths. It stopped a lot of questions from their new neighbours.
"Lucky to have a husband at all. More than I've got. Golly, he's doing well for himself."
Lizzie tried to smile. She knew the mercurial rise in Joey's income had not come about honestly, but that it would look suspicious if she didn't show pride in it. She loved Joey and felt a tremendous loyalty to him. She knew everything he did revolved around his love for her, but at times it seemed he wanted to possess her. She was beginning to wonder if this was normal loving.
"Not many could afford all this. You've a much better place than my sister, and she's been married for 5 years."
"Come and see the kitchen.
Lizzie was especially proud of having a kitchen to herself. She had a gas cooker she was learning to use. She lit it and put the new kettle on to boil. From the new cream and enamel kitchen cabinet, she took the sandwiches she'd made before going to work.
"Have you got a bathroom?" Irene wanted to know.
"Yes, upstairs. All mod cons and two bedrooms.
Can I go and have a peep?"
"Of course. Go on up while I make the tea and put a match to the fire in the living room." Lizzie meant to impress Irene. She'd spread a clean cloth on the table in readiness this morning, and now she set it out with scones and sandwiches, just like Mrs. Bender used to. She was taking in the teapot when she heard Joey's key in the lock. It stopped her in her tracks.
"Is something the matter?"
she asked as he came in. Her stomach was churning, afraid that there must be something to bring him home in his lunch hour. Now they were further from the bus stop, he'd only be able to stay 15 minutes or so. She was constantly aware that some dreadful calamity might overtake him.
"No, just thought I'd come home to see you."
He was smiling as he kissed her. Lizzie wanted to ask why, but she was aware of Irene coming downstairs again. She introduced them, feeling confused. Joey had never come home in his lunch hour before. She ushered Irene into the living room, sat her down by the fire, which was burning up nicely, handed her a plate and a sandwich. She turned to Joey.
"Do you want a sandwich?"
She'd packed his lunch for him to take to work as usual, and was afraid there wouldn't be enough here to satisfy three of them.
"I'll just have tea and a piece of scone."
He smiled at her lovingly. He appeared to be listening to Irene's praise of the bathroom, but Lizzie could feel his eyes watching her. Irene said brightly,
"I'm an usherette now. Has Lizzie told you? It's a smashing job. I sell the ice cream in the interval, too."
Lizzie blanched. She knew what was coming. She'd meant to broach the subject that evening when she had Joey to herself.
"There's another vacancy coming up next month. Lizzie's going to ask for it, aren't you, Liz?"
That threw her into a tizzy. She knew she was speaking too quickly.
"Well, it's different for me. You see, I don't want to leave Joey alone every evening, do I?"
This wasn't at all how she'd planned to handle it. Joey's strange eyes looked into hers. They had a new intensity.
"Take it," he said, "if you want to."
She'd expected him to be hurt and angry, but there was no rancor in his voice.
"I'll be busy, too. There are things I'd like to do in the evenings. It might be easier if we're both busy."
It almost took her breath away, though she had spent a few evenings without him recently. It was an about face for Joey. He'd been very much against it once. She'd expected to have to fight him before she could take it. Irene asked breathlessly,
"Oh, what are you going to do in the evenings?"
"I want to learn to drive for a start, so I can get a little car when we've saved up a bit."
"Lizzie, do you hear that? You are lucky."
A few minutes later he stood up, wrapped his arms round Lizzie in a bear hug, and kissed her.
"See you tonight, love."
He raised his hand in farewell to Irene and was gone.
"Well, I think that's dead romantic,"
Irene enthused. Lizzie felt a niggling anger. Was Joey checking up on what she did? On her friends? He'd said last night,
"What do you want to ask her here for? This is our place."
All the pleasure she'd felt in showing her new home to Irene was gone.
"He came all the way home just to be with you for a few minutes. He made me feel quite the gooseberry. Even a film star couldn't have more love than that. You don't know how lucky you are."
Lizzie knew he was jealous of everybody else she knew, even of Irene. Joey believed she belonged to him body and soul. She was the reason he'd do anything to get money. She was the reason he hated the Mortimers so much and wanted revenge. He thought the richer he was, the more she'd love him. She was beginning to feel she couldn't cope with Joey's feelings. She felt trapped by his love.